Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Are we last on your press list?
You're last for the day, but not for the...
Okay.
Oh, God.
Okay.
As long as you're last for the day, that's good. Feeling.
Eric, have a drink. Smoke a blood. Relax. This is it.
Yeah, I
welcome
might
to
take
Questlove
one, too.
Supreme.
I want to be like Sugar Steve. Like, that's the vibe I'm trying to...
No problem.
Wow. Well, he's already high, so...
No one ever said that, ever.
Shit, I might as well join y'all. I'll be right back.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
I'm going to cry.
Flowers is getting high. What the fuck is happening?
I know, Laia, keep it together. Shit.
Wow.
Eat a minute.
Eat a I bunch gotta of see mushrooms. It to believe it.
I need a minute.
Please don't do that. Please
eat a bunch of mushrooms. Are you eating mushrooms?
Really about to be fun.
What is your method? I don't even know. Is it a J? Is it a bowl? I'm trying to guess it. I guess a bowl. I feel. I look at your hand. No, I think it's a bowl.
Hold on. He just ate something. What'd you eat, Marvin Gaye?
You got an edible.
I got a
gummy.
edible. I have 100 joint. I don't know. My challenge is
going up. 100 milligram?
Though. Yeah. My challenge is going
up.
Yo,
Questlove Supreme exclusive.
This is like my days of virgin alcohol edibles are over.
Eric, right, we've done this show 100 times. And
I can't do the introduction without.
Wait, you just ate a gummy?
He just ate a gummy. This is the first time ever. It's a big moment. It's a big
never
moment.
Never been high with Questlove Supreme in the last 6 years.
Wait a minute. Whoa, y'all. We already discussed that. I've been doing this for like a year now.
But not on the show.
It's like my anniversary.
All right. Not on the show, though. Not on the show.
That is the one.
Not to my knowledge.
That's the one drug.
I just want to hug you if you was vaccinated.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a another episode. It's already kicked in, maybe. This is Questlove Supreme with Questlove. That's my name. And Fonte's laughing already. Anyway, we have Team Supreme with us. Laia, congratulations. You got your second shot. I'm congratulating people that got their shots already.
I did. Oh. It felt really good. I'll stay tuned and see how sick I feel tomorrow, but thank you.
Don't manifest anything.
Right.
You're gonna get through this unscathed. Unscathed.
It's gonna be beautiful.
Which one you get? You got the Pfizer or the Moderna?
Got the Pfizer.
Which one you get?
Got the old head. Got the OG.
You got the Pfizer.
Okay. I did gotcha. Funky Cold Moderna.
Oh.
Funky Cold Moderna.
80%, bruh. You 80% covered?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You know, I should be there.
I think anything other than that AstraZeneca, that's the only one that's a little janky.
That ain't allowed. That's illegal. You're talking illegal stuff now.
In Ireland, they don't do that shit.
Yeah, they don't. How's it going, Bill?
Fucking A. I'm great. Yeah, it's great. I don't have any
more Muppets. More,
yeah. Today was a Muppet day. I wrote a jingle. I worked out a little bit. Oh, my kids are going back to school next week, so I had to watch a video about the safety protocols for going back to school. That was the big thing that happened.
So this is the first time they're going back to school in a year.
Correct, and they're terrified and excited at the same time.
From 1 to 10, how happy are you right now?
67,000.
I got you. All right, like, Sugar Steve, how's it going, man? I seen you upped your logo and you got tags on your network right now. I'm impressed. Who's doing this stuff for you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're high right now, right?
The drugs have kicked in.
That's regular.
You're talking about we got some exciting new graphics happening on the network.
Yeah, I was borderline jealous. I was like, you now have graphics.
Can you let the world know you got a new record? Can you let the world know about that, please? I'm sorry.
No. Well, I'd rather answer the question I was asked. But
fuck you then.
Plug your record, Steve. Stop playing. Record store days upon us.
Yeah, it's not official yet, so I'm not saying anything.
It's Eric Baskin.
You're the most under-promoting celebrity I know.
Like, celebrity? Calm down.
I want to promote the graphics guys from my network. It's at Beat Knock and at Zahir 1974.
Okay. Well, I'm very proud that, you know, you upped your game and you have
network strong, baby. Network tight.
Network is strong. Fonticolo, how's it going?
I'm good, brother. Still laying low, staying out of white people's business. Hey, I'm cool.
Winning.
I see it. Staying out of white people's business. That's
good luck with that.
That should be our news.
Talk or should I?
No, he's getting to you.
No, no.
This is the process.
Oh, shit, am I supposed to say? Sakes, do not talk, please, guest.
Do you feel like you're on your own show right now, Eric Andre? Anyway, all right. So let me. I'm winging this now.
Oh, there's a guest. Shit.
All right. Yeah. Let's get to the guest. Our guest today is an extraordinary gentleman of many talents.
He's done
it all.
Put that away.
His film credits. What are you doing, Eric? We're not even on video.
We're gonna have to show.
Oh God! Now I wish this episode was on. He's acting. He's acting a fool on Zoom, ladies and gentlemen.
Booyakasha, Wug One.
Yeah. So his film credits include my personal favorite movie, which is The Invention of Lying, The Intern with De Niro, the cult classic Pop Star. With Andy Samberg, and shall I say, a very, very talented drummer, producer, Renaissance man. He also played ZZ in The Lion King, the live action version. And his TV credits are all the classic suspects like Curb Your Enthusiasm, Big Bang Theory. Help me out, y'all. My favorite got cut too soon.
Everything.
Don't trust the Bean 23.
I'm taking my career one line at a time.
No, I'm serious. You've done the classics. Two Good Girls.
All that other stuff is an embarrassment.
No, it's not. Take your flowers. We're giving flowers on the show.
Take your flowers. Welcome to botany school.
Take your flowers. Them all.
I will take all the flowers.
Anyway, Robot Chicken, Man Seeking Woman, Lucas Brothers Moving Company, with shall I say, the same very talented drummer, producer, Renaissance guy. And speaking of that great gentleman, I will say that's probably he is best known as the host of the insanely classic stoner talk show, Comedy Central, correct?
Adult Swim, no.
Adult Swim.
Adult Swim incorrect. Is its own. Okay, I didn't know that because I get
remember
it.
At a certain time it turns into Adult Swim. Come on, we tied this conversation. Cartoon Network. Well,
Adult Swim is Cartoon Network, yeah.
I mean, but if it's Electric Blue, it's still the Playboy Channel. Like, I didn't know it was a subsidiary. So.
Wow. That's a deep cut. Yeah.
Deep cut.
How old is that right now?
That is a deep cut.
Anyone over the age of 40 is dying right now at that reference. Because we've all been there with our hand on the remote control.
Absolutely.
Buses in the room.
Robin Bird. Where are you, Robin Bird?
Maybe this gummy was a bad idea.
Anyway, we're robbing that. Could you have on the show?
Great idea. Who is the guest? Like,
all right, I will get to it. Anyway, on his show's on Adult Swim, the Eric Andre Show. I would like to personally say that
Hannibal Buress. Who is it?
Oh, that I will point that if there was a paradigm shift in my 27-year career, you know, I mean, there's been Grammys, there's been associations with Jay-Z. Even when it's Sundance, no. I will say that as I live and breathe, I will testify that no cameo that I've ever done in my 27 years in this business has given me more bang for my buck than my appearance on this man's show. There's not a day that goes by where some damn Gen Z warns me that I'm not in the house. And I hate it. I love you for it, but I hate it. Like I will do like serious obituary post on Instagram, and there's always some little runt born in like 1998 that wants to remind me that. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Eric Andre to the show.
I'm glad that one episode will haunt you for the rest of your career. I like that. That makes me proud.
I don't even know how you did it, but literally. Yes, that has been the last 3 to 4, was it 3-4 years ago?
Incredible.
Yeah.
I like that I'm haunting you from beyond the grave.
Somewhere between 2 to about 20 people a day tell me I'm not in the house.
That's so horrible. That's incredible.
I don't know the power you have over these people, but you know. So right now, you just informed us at the top of the show that you've been doing press.
I got a movie coming out on Netflix, March 26th.
Okay, yes. We never promote at the top. So
me, Lil Rel, and Tiffany Haddish got a prank movie coming out that we made with the Jackass producers.
Wow.
And my producers. All hidden camera pranks. Bad Trip, it's called. Next Friday.
No, actually, okay. Yeah, it's already out because this is.
It's all yes.
Of, oh, okay. First week well, of April.
It's a hit. It's
like bad trip.
You've broken records already. Yes, it's out already. All right. The thing is that as a human, I don't know your story that well, but I do want to jump to the end and just ask the idea of the prank show. Like, how do you even strategize that after like 2 or 3 years out of it? Because you're a pretty recognizable figure, and you know in.
Oh, are you asking how did I do the fifth season a few years after the fourth season and disguise myself?
Well, no. I just meant like yes. Yeah, so what's the actual rhythm? Because now you're well known, so I think it's harder to prank people.
It's hard, but not impossible. It's for the fifth season of the show, I got rid of all my body hair, so I bicked my head bald, and then I got rid of my facial hair, and I waxed. My grundle, and I gained weight
for the people.
You really committed to this shit.
Yeah, and I gained a bunch of weight. I bleached my teeth. I did a whole body transformation. With all that weight gained and the hair gone, I look like I owned a bodega in Washington Heights.
Yeah, so you looked a little tan. Yeah, a little tan.
Wait, when did you shoot the fifth season?
In Amsterdam, specifically. And so it was kind of like almost like a Sacha Baron Cohen approach where the right disguise will hide your identity. Because he was able to do Bruno after he did Borat, and then he did Borat again. So like... really just kind of hiding in broad daylight. For the movie as well, we had to hide Tiffany Haddish and Rel. But Rel's kind of a chameleon. You put on the right outfit and he kind of disappears. And Tiffany, we gave her like face tattoos and cornrows and all this stuff.
And still nobody figured it out?
Diehard fans are always going to figure it out, but we just knew what demographic to avoid. And basically, we didn't prank anybody under... 30. Everybody we prank in the movie is like 45 plus. Like a lot of like exhausted moms in the movie.
having done this for for almost a decade, in your experience, well, one, has this ever gone wrong? Like extremely wrong, where you're like, I'm never doing this again.
The first day of filming, Rel and I got a knife pulled out on us.
The movie.
That was the very first. Wow. Prank Rel ever filmed.
That's just said y'all was screening people better. Y'all didn't demo.
Well, we demoed, I guess. I mean, the demo was resulted in a knife being pulled out on us, I guess.
So how far will you take it before you break to let said prank victim know that, you know, this is for entertainment?
Well, I don't want to get murdered, so I'd probably like before murder. Before the murder happens.
So how did? Can you tell us how that went? Like, so the person pulls a knife out, and then
yeah, it's in the movie.
Okay.
I don't want you to give the movie away, but I just meant in general, like with your show, like.
Yeah, sometimes people get upset. Yeah. And you kind of want to bring them to the point where they're about to commit
kill you
homicide, but then stop right before and then bend their mind.
That's the whole point of the show, like to get them right to that point.
I don't want to. I mean, it's not about making people angry. It's about distorting their reality and blowing their minds. So it's about adding absurdity and surreality into everyday reality.
I love it.
Thanks, okay. Man.
I always wanted to know that.
So, yeah, the prank that got us in trouble, me and there's a scene in the movie where Rel and I, my character, Rel's character, we did a bunch of drugs by mistake. We drugged ourselves accidentally, and then we pass out, we fall unconscious, and we wake up in a park, and our dicks are stuck together in a Chinese finger trap. So then, and it's all hidden camera pranks with real people. So our dicks are stuck in the Chinese finger trap. We're like, help, help, get us out of here. Help! But we're running. We ran up to a golfer for help. And then we shot a lot of it in Atlanta. and we went to this like real hood barbershop in Atlanta.
No, no.
And we went in with our dicks in the Chinese finger trap, and we went to the guy. We're like, hey, excuse
me. Wow.
The guy was like giving a guy a haircut, like mid fade. And we went to the barber. We go, can we borrow your scissors? Can you cut us out of this thing? It really hurts. And the guy went, oh, hell no. And like reached for his gun, couldn't find his gun, grabbed his knife. And then he chases out of the barbershop with a knife. And me and Rel could barely, it's a prosthetic, but it looks real. And me and Rel can barely run in the thing. We're like, ah! The thing snapped. Rel like rolled under a parked car. I ran for my life. And I looked at my security guy who looked like Blade. Like without the sword, he looked like Wesley Snipes in the first Blade movie. So I'm looking at him like, call the bit, call the bit. And he jumped like Dragon Ball Z, like, and like stopped the guy and did like a weird judo chop, like got the knife out of his hand. And then we told the guy, we're like, it's a hidden camera prank. And he was like, oh, y'all are hilarious. And like signed the release, no, like with no hesitation. He was like, when's this movie come out, man?
Oh, gotta love Atlanta.
Shit.
And then because of that, Rel quit the movie. This is the first day of filming. He's like, I quit. I got kids. I don't want to be killed. And then he called his agent. He's like, I quit. Eric's going to get me killed. Then he called Tiffany Haddish just to vent. He goes, I'm doing this Eric Andre prank movie. He's going to get me killed. We got a knife pulled out on us. I can't handle this shit. It's too stressful. Tiffany starts dying laughing. She wasn't in the movie at this point. She hung up with Rel. She called me a few minutes later. She goes, yo, you almost got Rel killed? And I was like, yeah, don't tell anybody. And she's like, no, fuck that. That shit's hilarious. I live for that shit. I want to be here. What? And I was like, and we just, and the woman that was supposed to play her role just had dropped out because of a scheduling conflict. So Tiffany's like, I want to be in your movie. And I was like, your wish is my command. And she was incredible in the movie. Like, she lives for that prank shit. She loves the danger and all the stuff I love.
She
about
does.
It. So anyway, that's my story.
She does. How do you prepare? Like, is there a script reading? Do you guys do?
Yeah, so we
not choreography, but
the show, the movie, we you need a story, so we wrote like a outline of the story, and then all the pranks have to have a narrative thread. Like, we're literally getting plot points from real people who weren't even aware they were in a movie. So we're like going up to people and putting them in these high stress situations, but then also mining plot out of them. So there is a script, kind of. It's like an outline, mm-hmm. because you have to be able to improvise within that outline, because obviously you're working with real people who aren't even aware they're being filmed. So
it's like even broader than what they say the Curb Your Enthusiasm outline is, I would assume.
Yeah, it's like, you know, how Sacha Baron Cohen or the Jackass guys kind of do it, where you go in with like an idea, a premise, but then once you're filming, you don't know anything goes because you got real people interacting with you.
You don't know what it's going to be. Yeah.
You don't know. Yeah.
How many people do you collaborate with you to make these, to write, to create these situations? Like, and do you bring them over from the Eric Andre show to the movie?
Yeah, a lot of, like, we brought, you know, we were working with Jeff Tremaine, who directed all the Jackass movies. So he was our like mentor through the whole process. So we brought in like people that wrote for Jackass, and Sacha Baron Cohen helped us. So we brought in some of his writers and some people from Punk'd. So it was like all the great prank minds and all their writers like coming in, helping us with all our problem solving and all the issues we were facing. And, you know, Rel and Tiffany brought a lot of value. My team for my show brought a lot of value and ideas to the table. So it was it's a big collaborative effort.
I see. Eric, where were you born?
Born in Miami, Florida. Grew up in Boca Raton, Florida.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's where your entire family's from.
My dad's from Haiti and my mom's from Manhattan.
Oh, I was so ready. So what, to talk
were
about
you
it.
The only child, or
no? I have an older sister who was born in Queens.
Okay. So, you said something to me on the set once. Did I hear you correctly? You told me that you went to Berklee.
Yeah,
School of Music. And yeah, I'm assuming that you meant the Boston one, not the one in the Bay Boston Area. I think at the time I thought you meant the Bay Area, but then I realized if a person's telling me they went to Berklee, they're obviously trying to tell me knee-deep musicianship.
they're not like, yeah, man, social studies. No, I played upright bass in college. That was my principal instrument in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you were considering a career in jazz, or like?
I was considering a long, hard career in jazz, which
really
hasn't been.
So, like, can you play Portrait of Tracy? Like, for me, for bass players, Jaco Pastorius is, or either Teen Town or Portrait of Tracy is like what Stairway to Heaven is for guitar players when they enter the Guitar Center. Like,
right,
they have to play it.
Jaco was electric, so I was always trying
to. Those are electric bass players. I was
always trying to figure out like Mingus bass lines, Charlie Hayden, Scott Lavaro, those like upright players, you know. Okay. Mingus, Black Saint and the Sinner Lady. That album is the most musical. And like Sun Ra, his bass player, had a lot of good bass lines.
Wait, guys, did I ever let you in on a factoid that Christopher McBride dropped on me about Ron Carter?
No, go.
It's weird to say this because he's still living. I don't want no smoke from Ron Carter, but I'm slowly discovering in the jazz world that Ron's solo abilities are not that desired in the jazz community. Oh. Which most jazz guys, when they look at what hip hop chooses to sample from it, like the number one mystery of all time is like, how in the hell, like according to them, that bass solo is so horrible on that McCoy Tyner song that winds up giving us the Choice Is Yours bass line for Black Sheep, that's the main thing that most jazz bass players bring up to me. Like,
They're haters. Come on, Ron Carter's a legend.
No, I mean, no. He's a legend, but he's a timekeeper, and I didn't know that he was not considered a good soloist. And they're like, well, the evidence is that Miles Davis has never given him a solo on any of his records.
But the tone of his bass.
No, I know. He's
and his bass lines were very sampleable.
I get it. So, you know, Ron Carter is probably.
Not only have we lost the audience, we've lost all your co-stars with.
No.
This is Questlove Supreme, dude.
Ron Carter
this
also
is what
had
we
a,
do.
A style named after him. Not
what just happened was
that.
The whole audience also just went and looked up about five songs and some albums, but that's Questlove Supreme.
So who's your well, besides Mingus, like, who was your... Wait, what year did you go to Berkeley?
I graduated 2005. 2004.
Any notable people with you at the time when you were going to school? Like, who's notable now that you...
Esperanza and St. Vincent.
Ah,
oh,
nice.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's yeah. Right. Shit, I think... Well, my bass player, I believe... was there at that time. If St. Vincent was there, then Mark Kelly was there, my bass player in the Roots. He was Mark there at the Kelly. Time.
I would have been in class with him. There was only like 10 of us.
Do you remember Mark Kelly? Maybe Mark just lied to us.
I don't remember most of college.
Me either.
It's all a blur.
It is all a blur.
All a dizzy okay. Blur.
That's funny. I was going to ask you, when did life become a blur? Because we didn't talk about it a little earlier in life, but... Not for, I was like, I wonder what kind of kid Eric was. Like, were you a shy kind?
I was bad. I was so hyper. I was real because my sister was so calm and sweet and docile. And my mom was like, yeah, motherhood's easy. I'm going to have one more kid. And then I was a nightmare.
That's what happens. Fucking disaster, second child, man. Fuck all that.
You stop saying that, Bill.
Hey, when this is all over and you meet my second child,
your daughter,
then we'll talk
your
about it.
Wait. But
your
wait,
daughter's
going to
be 24 years old asking us for the master reels of all these episodes.
QLS.
She's going to be scarred regardless, who cares? This is nothing.
But wait, but here's the thing though. I bet you got it better, because what's a Eric Andre disaster as a kid? Like, what kind of, what do you mean when you say like disaster?
I was just always getting detentions and suspension. I got good grades. I got like, you know, A's and B's, but I was not well behaved in class. I was very hyper. So like,
but you didn't set the house on fire or anything, right?
Nah, but you know, I got suspended for mooning my friends. I got suspended for going to school barefoot. I would bash my head through the. Remember that like the fire hose thing where you had to like only break in case of emergency.
Break case of emergency.
I would break those. I would like bust my head through them all the time.
So you were basically just preparing for what you do now.
Yeah, like, and just been on an amateur level, not getting paid for it.
Wow. So you're
pulling the fire alarm. It's like fucking, I was just like, any way to get in trouble in high school, I was like, yes, that's how I get in trouble today.
You live in a dream. That's dope.
This was in high school, elementary and high school?
Yeah, it got worse as I got older. Definitely like when hormones kicked in middle school. And I knew I could get the pretty girl's attention by acting out and misbehaving. Then it was all over. Then I was put my head through glass and just like put a lighter up to the fucking the little like sprinkler system thing.
I would think that a bass solo could work. That like you being in a band would have worked that trick out. Not like
every band
daredevil my way into your heart.
Yeah, no, every band I was in sucked, so I had to use different tactics to get attention.
After you graduated Berkeley, what started your, I guess, your full commitment into comedy?
I kind of retired from music on the same day I graduated from Berkeley. I was like, well, that's no future for me. And then I started doing comedy as I was finishing college in Boston. And I just moved to New York City right afterwards and just continued doing like stand-up. I mean, it was humble beginnings. I was just doing chicken shit open mics for a decade before anybody paid attention or I got any money for it. But
oh, wow.
But, yeah. So you pounded the pavement mostly in New York City for your comedy chops?
Yeah.
Okay, so can you, besides, I guess, Wyatt, who... I guess you could sort of say he has one foot in like alt comedy and traditional comedy. Can you explain, not the parameters, but just like how New York City operates as a comedy testing ground? Like, is Brooklyn strictly just for alternative comedy? And what does that really encompass?
I don't know. And it's never, I never liked that term. It's too like
neo soul. Yeah. It's like neo soul.
It's like neo soul.
Yeah, it's
but like I mean, you do agree that I mean, at least from my observation, like I would think that the mecca or the epicenter would be the Comedy Cellar, like because the thing is, comedians will have to work out their material somewhere. So usually, like the Seinfelds and the Harts and the Rocks and whoever is the name it, like they will work out at the Comedy Cellar. Yet, you know, when I go sort of north of 23rd Street, then usually that's where I'll see, I mean, I wouldn't know a consistent Vegas name now, but like I'm really dating myself with this reference, the David Brenner of whoever now is, like that Vegas comedian usually works out.
I know what you're talking about. Like you're talking about the difference between like mainstream or an alternative. You know, right. I think you can get in a rut if you only play show. You don't want to get in a comfort. You want to stay out of your comfort zone when you do stand up. So you don't want to do any crowd that's already on. Like you don't get used to only performing for crowds that are already on your side. You want to kind of go and play for crowds that don't know you or are more objective. That's how you sustain your comedy muscles.
So where would you work out?
Some of those alternative rooms are a little too inside jokey. You want to really like have to prove yourself every time. Because then by the time you film your special, your material is like flawless. You perform for every cross section of America and you know, even international audiences.
Right. So where would you work out when you were working on your chops?
I hit the road. I did 80. I used another number. 87 shows in 49 cities internationally.
Shit.
Nationally and internationally. Something like that in a year in 2019. So then I taped my special at the end of 2019 and aired it 2020 on Netflix. But yeah, it was like I tried to do every city in America and a bunch of cities abroad.
About your stand up, your special, which I love, by the way. Like, right. I thought that shit was brilliant, man. Like, right. no bullshit. The last bit that you do, the fucking FaceTime call.
Oh, right. Yeah,
dude.
And that was incredible.
How do you set that up? Weed. Like,
that was like pennies from heaven. She like brought up weed. She brought up like different topics that I discussed. Special. I mean, I did it. I filmed it a few times with a few different moms. We filmed two shows, and each show I did like two or three moms per show until we got that mom, and she was clearly the best mm-hmm. one. But yeah, she was amazing. She was giving me her credit card information and shit. She was fucking wild.
Nah, that shit was great.
How many times you went through that before? I thought that was like a one-time only.
No, I did it every night on tour. I would prank a mom at the end of my – that was always my closer on tour. So I had that bit down to a science, even though it's like a prank, essentially, you know.
Was she the best of them?
There were some moms on tour that were fucking wild, saying heinous shit and just like no filter. She was up there, but like there was definitely some lightning in a bottle moms. Like in Oakland, we had the crazy mom doing drugs on camera. There was one mom, I was like in Possum Ridge, Arkansas or somewhere. Real like backwoods kind of place, and the mom and the dad picked up and just like stared at me like they were very like MAGA adjacent, just like staring me up and down, silence, like thinking I'm like, and I'm fucking with them. I'm like, send me 20,000 in Bitcoin if you want to see your son alive again. Dad was like shirtless and he looked like he was on a real life version of King of the Hill. Like he was just like. Stone silence, but those were just like lightning in a bottle performances.
So that means that you did that other bit. I'm sorry, but the other bit that you do when you go to the audience and ask them, have they seen their parents have sex or whatever?
Oh, like, that I did like a version of without the fake parents on stage. I would just like ask, do audience participation stuff, but I'm not the for the special we cast to.
I was like, yeah, how much does that get paid for 260?
I mean, everything I put out in the last year and a half has been during quarantine. So I'm like, I haven't gotten any like personal feedback. I haven't interacted with anybody. So I'm like, did anybody watch the special? Did anybody watch Air Garden? I'm only like sucked into the internet, but like it doesn't feel real because I've just been like putting stuff out.
No, yeah. So let me ask you then, since you're talking about the stand-up, then I'm sorry, one more question. Because in the beginning, the first thing you kind of talk about, like you hit like the coke, the meth hard. And it was funny because I was like, damn, I know I'm progressive as fuck. But this is like, I was like, is this the new normal where we are like normalizing the fuck out of a meth and coke like this? It was ill to me. And I was like, I can't wait to talk to you about it. Because I was like, am I getting old?
Yeah, no. Okay, so. You gotta understand. How do I say this without sounding preachy? All drugs were legal until 1914.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Gosh, where do I begin? Also, first of all, if we decriminalize all drugs, would anybody on this Zoom like go out and smoke crack and shoot?
Absolutely
heroin?
Not. Hell no.
In 5 minutes, if it was legal.
No. No.
Well, wait a minute.
Jack did, well, maybe. Okay. All right. Jack Daniels is legal, right? Would any of us tonight go to Rite Aid, buy 70 bottles of Jack Daniel, and just drink them top to bottom?
Right.
No, right. Because we wouldn't feel good. We exercise common sense. The war on drugs, the best meme I saw was the war on drugs is my favorite war because drugs won.
Clearly.
Look, I think.
there's a difference between drug use and drug abuse. I think we've been fed so much propaganda by our government, and the DEA was only put in place by Nixon. It's all just a way to arrest brown and black people, overcrowd our prisons with brown and black bodies. White people and black people do drugs at the same rate, yet that black people are arrested five times as much as any a suburban white kid. It's all based on the war on drugs is all based on classism and racism, and it always has been. Sure. The opium wars, and so okay, we're getting to 1914. How do I not turn this into a TED talk?
Dude, let's go.
This is what we're here for.
Okay.
I wanted this.
The less Amir talks, the better the show. Go. Okay.
Absolutely.
Shut the fuck up, Bill.
Okay.
Basically, all drug propaganda that was really revved up with Nixon and Reagan, all anti-drug propaganda, like there was a prohibition on alcohol and that failed miserably. The prohibition on drugs that's about 106 years old is the same exact thing. It's all based on control. It has nothing to do with your safety. I mean, more people die from motorcycle accidents than ecstasy.
Well,
very few people die from ecstasy. No one's died from marijuana. No one's died from LSD or psilocybin.
Shrooms or whatever.
Shrooms. So the government doesn't give a fuck about your safety. And if they're pretending they give a fuck about your safety, it's make-believe. Clearly, because guns are legal. And marijuana is illegal federally. So, So basically, in 1914, all right, I'll get to it.
I think basically, I just realized that I'm a
Chinese
marijuana.
Chinese immigrants coming to America, to the West Coast, Chinese immigrants. And Chinese immigrants brought a lot of opium to America. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of politicians started running against putting a prohibition on opium, which there was a problem with opium and it is addictive, but. Part of it was a xenophobic policy.
White folk wasn't getting no money off that shit.
Yes, it's all about money and control. So Chinese people were bringing in opium and profiting from opium. And so some of the earliest anti-drug prohibition policies were anti-Chinese. Marijuana was associated as a Mexican drug. Marijuana prohibition was associated was Mexican xenophobia. Mm-hmm. And then in the 80s, there was some statistic, it was like 5 grams of crack is the same jail time as 50 grams of cocaine. Mm-hmm. Guess who was smoking crack in the 80s, and guess who was doing cocaine? Suburban white kids, not black people in the inner city. So whenever there's a popular inner city drug that black people or poor people, even crystal meth's associated with you're losing your teeth, you got scabs on your face.
Is that not true?
But Adderall, done by suburban white teenagers for their SATs, that's fine. However, methamphetamine and Adderall, which is amphetamine, is one molecule different. It's essentially the same drug. PC.
Wait, that's the same as him. No, it's the same thing as that's facts, because it's the same thing as like heroin and all these like hydrocodone and all this shit. But my son had to get his wisdom teeth pulled, and they prescribed him hydrocodone. Yeah. I was like, "Yo, he ain't taking this shit. Like, he ibuprofen. He can do Tylenol. He'll be cool." Like, I'm like giving a 15-year-old a fucking like, "Are you shitting me?" Like, nah.
Yeah. So,
damn.
PCP, aka angel dust, is a disassociative. Ketamine is a disassociative. Poor people, black people do angel dust, so it's illegal. But now there's ketamine clinics because suburban white moms are doing ketamine for depression. Hydrocodone and all opiates. It's like there's a Chris Rock joke. The government doesn't want you to do your drugs. The government
wants you to do their drugs. And they're doing that shit now because that's the next move. To like weed. I think weed being legal, that's a foregone conclusion. I mean, that's coming. The next shit they're moving into is shrooms and like LSD, because they're using that to treat shit like bipolar disorder and all kind of like OCD, any kind of. They're doing that shit now. That anxiety, the whole nine. Yeah. That's the next shit.
So I guess that's my point. There is therapeutic value to so many drugs that the DEA has made illegal, and the war on drugs has only helped two groups, the drug cartels
in Central and South America that are violent and the DEA. Everybody else suffers. We all have a natural inclination to reach altered states. Caffeine is a drug. Nicotine is a drug. Alcohol is a drug.
Oh, sugar,
those
honey.
Are legal drugs. Alcohol is way more addictive and corrosive than marijuana or any psychedelics. Nicotine is way more addictive than any drug, more addictive than heroin and cocaine, but it's legal. So there's no rhyme or reason to it. The majority of people that use drugs just use it for recreation and to achieve an altered state for whatever, for social bonding, for creativity. The majority of us don't get addicted to these drugs. Even heroin users, they say 80% of people that have tried heroin aren't addicted, only 20%. So what we do in this country and what we did with alcohol prohibition, which failed miserably, is we penalize everyone for like a small select few that are addicted. Drug abuse is an issue. And I'm not saying we shouldn't do drugs responsibly, but just like skiing, you can die skiing. If you ski responsibly, you won't ski into a tree, hopefully. If you ride a motorcycle responsibly, if you drive a car responsibly, you won't die. You can fall in front of the subway train for being reckless and die. So it's about, I don't know.
You gave it to me. I knew you was going, it's exactly why I asked you, because I knew you was going to come back.
I'm sorry I went on such a diatribe, but
we're rabbit hole central.
I'm trying to undo 100 years of prohibition and all the propaganda that came with it. And I also think part of the reason drugs are dangerous is because they are illegal and they're not regulated. And that means they're made in the street and they're cut with all kinds of garbage. But if they were legal and regulated, then
if there was a uniform process,
we could educate people about the proper way to take them and enjoy them and avoid the dangerous ways of
so like an organic.
Okay, that's what I was gonna ask is I hear from people that, okay, well, these are natural and they come from the earth, so you can use these, but these over here are chemically made and those are bad. So I mean, is there really truly a difference? Or
everything kind of comes from the earth. Like LSD is chemically made, but it's based off a mold, a bread mold, ergot, I think it's called. It's like a mold that is on like wheat and barley. Cocaine, I've done cocaine a few times in my life. It's not my favorite drug. I hate putting stuff up my nose. It tastes gross and it's cut with all kinds of garbage. But if someone had a coca plant from Colombia or Peru and they wanted to make me a coca tea, I'd be open to that, because it'd probably just be the same effect as coffee. You can overdose on caffeine too. Caffeine's the most popular psychoactive drug worldwide. They say 90% of adults worldwide have tea or coffee in their life, and it is a drug, and it is it can kill you.
Is that true, Steve?
I'm still here, baby.
Steve, Sugar Steve is, I think,
I'm a science experiment.
The bottle of health.
Yeah, his blood has at least, I mean, the amount of caffeine.
My coffee has a little blood in it.
Caffeine, nicotine.
I'm a big coffee guy, but I've had insomnia lately. I think I love coffee, but I'm trying to dial back my caffeine intake.
So you don't smoke?
Are you a, like, first thing in the morning must-have coffee person?
I'm a first thing in the morning must-have coffee person, but I don't go into the afternoon, but I've been, like, I don't even smoke weed really, but I've been smoking a lot of weed just to get to sleep. And I've been eating gummies and I usually don't do edibles. But I don't want to like have to take, I'd rather smoke weed to get to sleep than take like Benadryl or like a melatonin, anything like even like that over the counter stuff. I'd rather like use a natural, like an indica.
Oh,
good old indica.
In the couch. Yes. I learned
are
that's
you,
what
you're a thinker? Yeah. Do you stay on the couch?
Yeah, I'm neurotic. I just can't. I'm like, I don't know. This quarantine's getting to me. I'm turning into Jack Nicholson in The Shining. I'm just like staring out the window, watching the snow collect in the maze.
Well, yeah. How did you spend the last year? Because if I recall correctly, every April or every March, you ask me to participate in your birthday. You were born in March or April? Like, your birthday is around this time. Right. And I know that you're world famous for these wild crazy birthday parties that one of these days I'm going to make it to. Like, I kind of regret it not growing up in the era of the NWA pool party, but I would imagine that your party rivals whatever I thought was happening at the NWA house. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm flattered by that. That is high praise.
Did you throw one last year despite?
Oh, the one last year got shut down because of COVID. It was at the Palladium. We had like a full, it was going to be the one, it was going to be the showstopper. And it got
really
shut down. We're talking about doing a new one at Meow Wolf. Do you know Meow Wolf?
Gesundheit? Meow Wolf.
Look up Meow Wolf.
And you'll I'm afraid to Google this. All right. So
they're like an artist collective in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they built these crazy, big, beautiful installations. Like this crazy, it's Pee-wee's Playhouse. But they just opened a new one in Las Vegas called Omega Mart. And like George R.R. Martin, the guy that created Game of Thrones, he's like an investor in the company now. And like, so they're, I don't know how to describe them. They're like just this like art experiment, the most successful art experiment like that's been pulled off in the 21st century. But anyway, I'm going to throw my next birthday at Meow Wolf, hopefully.
What was the wildest thing that's happened at your birthday party?
I used to live in a chicken shit apartment in Hollywood when I first moved to LA, like a really small studio apartment. And I used to throw them there and we would like huff ether and get a bunch of camels and zebras and pack them in the car and throw firecrackers at everybody. And my neighbor would get pissed at us and throw glass bottles. And we had like a stripper come by one time and she had a house arrest anklet. And like, I would have like, I would hire like a bunch of mall Santa Clauses and clowns. It would pack everybody in my little tiny studio apartment and we'd sprawl out into the street in the parking lot. And
that sounds so COVID nasty.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was a different time.
different
era.
I gotta find out, has any of your pranks or any of your parties or any of your antics ever gotten you wound up in LA County Jail?
Yeah. San Bernardino County Jail. Actually, I pranked the mayor of Rancho Cucamonga, which is a real city out here. And I did a prank at a town hall meeting and I got arrested. And the cop asked me what my name was and I told him it was John Coltrane. And then and that was another penalty. I didn't know you're not allowed to lie to a cop. I went to jail. I had a disturbing the peace and whatever, telling a cop your name's John Coltrane, whatever that misdemeanor was.
Yo, what are you in there for, impersonating John Coltrane?
I got a kind of personal joke, but seeing as though you share it with the world, it shouldn't be that personal. Have you ever had any penile injuries from any of the things that you've done?
Penile injuries? No. I put my hand through a glass window and got stitches. This year, John Cena threw me through a bookshelf and I got a concussion.
A doctor. Ooh. Oh,
but no penile, fake penile injuries. The Chinese.
I love that it comes with a hand signal. Every
time you say, yeah, I'm still debating on whether or not that's going to be the promo clip or not.
I appreciate your physical sacrifice. When you get old, some things gonna hurt.
I was gonna ask you, man. What is your relationship? You can talk about both your friendship and your creative kind of partnership with Hannibal Buress, because y'all are just met, but y'all are just different.
He's not on season 5, right?
He quit the show. He left season 5. I mean, he left on camera, so he did a proper dismount, but
wow,
it's over, man.
Oh wow.
Oh
man!
But y'all not over though.
Amicable? No,
amicable. But the show's not over. No, you know, we did the show together in an abandoned bodega in Brooklyn. That was the first version of the show, pre-Adult Swim, when I was just making the show on my own dime. Mm-hmm. So he's been with the show since the beginning. And then we took such a big hiatus to make the movie. We took 4 years off to make between season 4 and 5 of the Eric Andre Show to make the movie. that coming back.
Damn, y'all did.
I think just the momentum. I don't know. He was just like, I'm done. And I was like, please at least come by the show and quit on camera so it's a proper. I don't want people to think we had a falling out. But it's the he was just great on the show because he's just polar opposite in energy. Chris Rock had the best quote. He goes, the reason your show works is because there's no two black guys on earth that have less in common than you and Hannibal Buress. That is comedy.
That's funny.
That's real.
That's so true.
But also Hannibal kind of like, he seemed like the voice of reason sometimes. So when I was being crazy to the guests on the show and they would like look to Hannibal for some relief, he's equally crazy. He's just low energy. So they would like look to him for some kind of like, help me. And then he would say something just as mind blowing and, you know, psychotic. And then they'd be like, oh shit, I'm trapped.
Who will play your sidekick or?
So we had a few different sidekicks. We had a very funny comedian, Felipe Esparza. We had Oscar nominee, Lakeith Stanfield.
Really?
Oh yeah. This past season. Yep. And we had we cloned Hannibal a few of the episodes. We had Blannable, which was his like clone. So yeah, we had a good revolving door of co-hosts this past season.
I gotta say that when I did the show and I had to do something with vomit, I didn't realize. So I guess I didn't realize that. A husband and wife team come to me with these assortment of cereals and they ask. No, but it was like they pushed a cart with every variety of cereal on it. And they're like, what's your favorite cereal? And I was just like, well, I like Golden Grahams. And they're like, okay, well, that's going to be. I didn't realize that the
that
vomit that you,
yeah,
that yeah, the vomit you see on television is basically just soggy cereal.
Yeah, oatmeal, soggy cereal. Sometimes we do like pea soup with carrots. Depends on what I'm in the mood to throw up.
Yeah. So yeah, the amount of time that you guys dedicate to vomit on that show.
A lot of vomit. We got
to
move.
Not to mention the intro. That has to be painful, yo.
It's painful. That I get hurt a lot.
Mm. Yeah. It's,
we figured out how to do it the right way. I used to use no crash pads, nothing.
I know.
Wiping out on cement.
You would just, you would just eat it. You would just freaking go for it. And I was like, wait, there's really not a stunt double here to.
Appreciate your sacrifice.
I was dumb. I was dumb.
I know that, of course, with the Jackass show and also with Sasha, that, you know, these level prank shows have always been here. But I, for one, was just under the impression that, like, black people really weren't in that level of pranking that, you know.
They're not. That's why I had to drag Rel into it. He was like... He fucking hated it. He's like, dude, because he had so much PTSD from that first day.
Yeah, man.
But actually, Tiffany was like born to do it. She loved the more dangerous a prank was, the more she was like, let's fucking go. So that's what I'm excited about the movie. It's like kind of the first black prank cast.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some funny black comedians on Punk'd. But not really like, as far as the movie goes, not in this level where it's like the leads are like black leads pranking people. It's stressful.
If I recall, wasn't my man also on your show? What was the old boy that did his version of that on BET?
Ali Al?
Hits from the street. Yeah, I think Al was real there.
Ali Al.
Hits.
Hits from the street. Was he not on your show at one point?
He was on Punk'd.
Who?
and you answer my question.
Right there. No, I don't mean that. That's not a song.
Like a goddamn owl. Yeah. That's fantastic.
You,
like,
you shot that down.
He was the only black dude that was ever on Punk'd, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's really funny.
He okay, I'm sorry. Forgive me. He graduated to Punk'd. I knew he graduated to another show.
I got it.
I didn't.
Right, Bear, he used to work up against the wall on Georgia Avenue, right by Howard University.
Up against the wall.
I will say that Method Man and Red Man had a prank show.
They did. Yeah, yep.
They did.
For a hot second. For a hot second.
It just lasted for a second, but it was watchable? Really fucking funny. It's underrated.
They had the one episode. They had the episode where they pranked Ludacris, where they had him rap over like this shitty beat. But Luda killed the beat, though. Like, that's what the really? Shit was funny. Yeah. Yeah, like, it was some bullshit. It was like, it was some trash beat. And they actually had Kevin Lyles on it. They was like, yo, this is Kevin. You need to get to the studio, whatever. So he comes, and it's this trash-ass beat. And he started rapping. And then they take it up, and they're like, okay, so Luda, do the same verse, but make, like, a frog sound. And, like, he did the ribbit and then was rapping.
Went with it.
And he was going with it. And the shit was actually sounding way better than it probably should have.
Wait, what year was that? Because I'm curious as to what a trash beat means in hip hop.
Like early aughts, right, Fonte? Like
versus, yeah, this had to be, yeah. This was like 2003, something like that around that time.
Back when we still had standards in hip hop. Okay, I get it. Because I was about to say, like, someone plays me a trash beat now, and I'm like, oh, that's going to be a hit, you know.
This shit can work, right?
But I'm sure right. It's easier to prank black celebrities than black folks, because you know you never know what we'll do. We don't know. We don't, like he's the knife thing. It would have been wrong if it wasn't Eric Andre and Rel. That shit would have been. I don't think it would have been squash.
One day, is there anything that's off the table for you?
No, I don't know. You gotta like. I think there's good bad taste and bad taste. It's like you're trying to make things go wrong. But in the right way, if that makes any sense. So,
but in the world of comedy, even that which is deemed unthinkable or undoable sort of gets embraced by someone's dark side, correct? Well, just in terms of things that are taboo in comedy usually get, you know, spoken about, like death or things that are tragic or whatnot.
Right. So, I mean, you know, the famous saying, comedy is tragedy plus time. It's like you're mining for things that are taboo to talk about because that's the high wire act of comedy. You know what I mean? You're looking for the high stakes topic. Or at least I am. And the comedians I grew up admiring are, you know, like Richard Pryor and George Carlin and Chris Rock and Chappelle.
I see.
Yeah, did I answer your question?
I think you did.
Maybe just kicked in. Higher, so I was good.
The weed just kicked in. Perfect. Just kicked perfect in. Time. Good job.
Yo,
all right.
Dude. All right. So the age of mainstream celebrities having their OnlyFans accounts is, you know, now popping up normal. What was your decision behind your OnlyFans?
I wanted to make money off my feet. Picks. We're in a quarantine, man. I need supplemental income, Sugar Steve style.
There's your soundbite, Steve. Well, wait. Okay, I'm not going to lie. Like you're the only person I know.
Just feet pics, though. Is it just really? Is it just feet pics?
Oh, it's everything. Depends on how much you tip.
Oh.
Wait, you've done live OnlyFans?
Yeah. See,
oh, God. Okay, so what happens when we come to your OnlyFans?
Hold on. Say it again.
Not OnlyFans.
Fuck.
You know what that is?
You got a what now? Say it again.
A blumpkin.
No, what's? I don't know. What is
look
this?
Get up. Google image.
Doing it right now? Do I want to do
that?
Am I going
to get a virus and I type this in?
You don't want to do it. You don't want to do it.
No, I don't want to do it.
Don't do it.
Oh, don't do it.
Definitely don't do it. Don't look up an Alabama hockey mask either. Trust me.
Come on, man. I'm at least going to look up a blumpkin because right that's not. Not
a, don't do Alabama it, are you?
It'll scar you for life. You won't sleep.
I want to know what he does on OnlyFans. It costs too much. I need a free.
You don't want to look up a blumpkin or Alabama hockey
mask. All right, fine.
Can you explain it in three words?
Oh, man.
Two girls in one cup territory again. Wait, say it again.
two chick, one cup.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I literally just said that.
Oh, really?
I was like, is this two chicks in one cup again?
Yep.
You know all this stuff, Eric. Boy. Are you part of some like weird Reddit group? Like, how do you keep up on all this shit?
Who?
Eric. I mean, once I opened the OnlyFans door, there was no looking back.
Can one seriously make a living monetizing off their OnlyFans?
Big time. Big time.
Would you?
The amount of money I made off like just the kickoff intro, I was like, huh. They basically figured out, they're a London company, they're worth $800 million, and they're only 4 years old. Mm. And they kicked off, they just figured out a way for all like the soft core porn thirst trapping of Instagram. They figured out how to monetize that in like the simplest way. It's like, hey, check out this sexy, thirst trappy kind of picture. You want to see more? Go over to my OnlyFans. And you're like, oh, okay. And it's like, then you can give like $3 all the way up to whatever, $1,000 for either like a direct message back. It's basically like modern day phone sex.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking about it. I'm hearing. I mean, I'm listening to you. I'm listening.
Yeah. So if you want some feet pics, you got to tip me $3-4.
Wait,
you monetize feet pics. That's
have you at least broken the five digit or six digit arena as far as monetizing off of this?
You know, Questlove, it's not polite to their money. We're not all Grammy Award winning virtuoso drummers.
My fault, man. You hit me with the David Letterman, Eddie Murphy.
$3, OnlyFans.com/Eric Andre. Tip me.
There you go.
Some of us are pounding the pavement, the internet pavement, okay? We can't be just palling around with Jimmy Fallon and all kinds of A-list celebrities.
Wait a minute. Speaking of which, I wasn't going to ask this, but I do have to ask this. Did it irk you at all with the way that Chance the Rapper was sort of egging you on about your relationship at the time with Rosario?
Yeah, what the fuck? I'll tell
the
you.
The whole prove this shit. Because you guys did a prom photo, right? You guys
here we
did
go.
That motherfucker, I asked him. I love him, by the way. So I'm talking shit with love.
Right.
I can't remember. I asked him a couple things. I DM'd him a couple like, hey, not even like a favor, just like, hey, stop by. Never would respond once.
Right.
And then when I was dating Rosario was like, Chance doesn't believe that we're dating. He thinks you're doing a prank. So I was like, are you serious?
When I saw it, I was like, oh, that's, wait, maybe
that's
they
fair.
Are doing
that's
a prank.
Fair. Yeah. Right.
I mean,
I'm finally getting the movie star from the poster that I grew up paying O2.
I'm not believing.
I tweeted him back. I was like, yeah, look, this isn't Photoshop. Look, motherfucker. Then he wrote back right away. He's like, no, I don't know. I was just saying, And I was like, oh, all of a sudden your phone works. Yeah, I took it very personally.
Wait a minute. He's been on your show before.
Yeah, he was great on the show.
Yeah.
And I just saw him not too long ago backstage at the Lion King premiere. I was talking to him, and then I felt a tap on my shoulder, and I turned around and it was Beyonce, and I was like, oh, and she was like, hi, nice to meet you. I was like, oh, and then I turned back to Chance. I was like, fuck, did I just blow it with Beyonce? Was that cool? He's like, nah, you were cool. Then I turned to my left and I asked this other guy, I go, did I just fuck that up? Am I cool? Was that cool? And the guy was like, no, you were cool. And I looked up, it was Jay-Z. I was like, oh, you're Jay-Z. Oh, not cool. I was like, no. And I was like, turned back to Beyonce. I was like, fuck, did I just blow it with Jay-Z? I wasn't cool, right?
those two are like the modern day walking lottery ticket. Yeah.
They're the king and queen. They're the royal family.
They are.
Wow.
They
are.
What was new how new long did that process
family.
Take?
The new royal family.
The new royal family.
They replaced the old fucking shitty ones.
The only ones I recognize.
That's right.
How long did that process take to do with the Lion King? Like how did you even get involved?
45 minutes.
Huh?
Ooh, that check.
Really?
Yeah, voiceover.
I know, but.
Oh, it's VO, yeah. Okay.
But voiceover. Still. You go in, you go blah, 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 blah. And then you're like, see you in 3 years.
Yep. That about sums it up.
That's the dream.
That sounds awesome. Okay. Can you talk about your Blarf project?
No.
Why?
I'm not associated with whoever that is. I didn't technically clear any sample whatsoever.
So you don't know what I'm talking about when I mean Blarf. Okay, I get it.
I know what you're talking about, but I also know what violating intellectual property rights
when things are under the radar, I doubt, you know.
No, yeah. I know. But
you just asked, what do you think about the project, Amir? You just, you know, you gotta
go. Yes.
What do I think about it? I think whoever that person is was very cool. Very, very cool. And
do you recommend that they
Mad Lib? How do any DJ, how do you get away with, do you just sample and hope that you
come and get me? That's the name of it's the Wild Wild West. Just come and get me.
Yeah. So you just hope, like, I'm his marquee. I hope Gilbert O'Sullivan doesn't sue me.
I think a majority of the time people do it sort of thinking that it's going to be under the radar.
Yeah, but it's
you
not.
Know, like, okay, so nah, in the case
with
of Dilla,
YouTube and fucking who sampled the shit, nothing's under the radar now. Yeah. Like everybody's a goddamn snake.
Well, even then, you have to look, like, you know, like, if it weren't for me watching MTV, I would, you know, I wouldn't have known, my parents would have never known about Nothing But a G Thing or any of that shit, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, someone younger, it's always like a nephew or a kid that's like, oh, that's mom and dad or uncle something. But,
right, but that's what I heard. Like, if you sample a Marvin Gaye song or a Jimi Hendrix song, if you sample somebody whose estate controls the rights to the artist, then it's extra trouble because it's just the kids and the grandkids looking to make a buck versus the original artist. So
the original artist.
I don't know how there are creative ways. Premier or any of these producers got away with so much sampling.
A lot of it is chopping. I'll admit that in the Jay Dilla situation now with the 10cc estate.
They put that shit in a fucking Netflix special. It was like, what did you expect?
What happened?
Well, okay, yeah. So Chappelle used "Working on It" from Working Donuts, as his intro, of which, you know. None of which that's been released from Jay Dilla's estate was ever meant for public consumption. Like, he would just make beat tapes. But of course, once he passed away, then these beat tapes became folklore, and next thing you know, they became album releases. And so, I mean, as a result, because he was such a niche cult figure artist, it was just like it only became a thing to those that knew of Jay Dilla. But
10cc is trying to.
So 10cc, Gottly and Cream, the guys that behind 10cc, they sold a lot of their publishing, like, in the early aughts. So now a new firm owns the publishing rights, and I guess they're kind of on that litigious. I won't say his name. Tough City Records.
It's the public,
president guy.
It's the company.
Yeah, so that's what they're doing. Which, you know, I try to actually meddle in. When I thought it was the 10cc guys, I wrote a letter and was just like, "Look, this is a guy who was making art and da 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 da, and you know, you suing him, and you know, is not going to solve any of this." And I tried, but they were like, "Oh, we don't own the publishing to that anymore." So I was like, "Oh, that was a wasted email."
That's noble of you that you did that.
Yeah, I'm a little overzealous when it comes to Jay Dilla's legacy. So
yeah,
just trying to make sure that
you know. I respect you.
Yo, so how have you been? I will probably say that comedians have probably had it the hardest of all the creatives as far as how they spent their last year trying to maintain creativity, especially when you don't have no one to work out in front of. Have you figured out how to pivot or how to still maintain your foot in the comedy world? Like, do you just write more movies, more TV shows? Or
I was fortunate enough to like be coming to the end of a bunch of projects. When it started, I had like everything in the can. I was able to edit Eric Andre show from home. I had delivered the stand-up special. The movie was already delivered and ready to go. So I had like a bunch of stuff ready to go in the chamber. Fortunately, I didn't have to like shut down production or shut down a tour. I was at like the end of all these various projects. So I've just been writing and just been doing a ton of writing. I don't know. And trying to embrace this time. I think this time is an exercise in patience. And this is kind of like a reset button for the cosmos. I think we need to just like spiritually hit the pause button, reassess our existence as a...
Because we'll never get time like this again in our lifetime. We'll never get a period of rest like this.
When are we as adults going to be able to get this like little pause button? So I'm trying to look at the positive aspects of that and just like doing hobbies, cooking more, reading more, catching up on TV shows I wanted to watch. I'm trying to like embrace it a little bit. It's not easy.
Showing off your sexy feet.
Showing off.
What do you watch? I would imagine that a person like yourself, in the ways that you express your creativity, that like quote unquote regular shows would seem like mundane and boring to you, but like, what do you watch?
I haven't anything done well. I just started catching up on all the serialized dramas. I'm watching The Sopranos and The Wire and Game of Thrones. I never got around to any of those shows because it was just so much of a commitment.
Right.
You got to watch in order and all that shit. I have ADD. So now I'm trying to.
So as a Wire newbie, is it anticlimactic now that everyone's like fetishized the shit out of this show?
No, like it had a slow start. Like, I was like, what is it?
Season two is weird. Real Wire fans hate season two.
Yeah.
I heard season two is controversial, but I just started season two. But once I get to season three of Beyond, also every single show on Earth, whether it's a television show or whether it's a comedy or drama, the first two seasons don't really count. It really takes
three to four
to find your voice,
to find its stride. Even like Seinfeld, even shows that like were these mega, mega hits. If you watch the first two seasons of like even The Simpsons, you're like, what the fuck show is this?
Oh, not this. Yeah, no.
This is a mess.
It's a different worlds like that, too.
Yeah.
Well, it was weird you said that because I thought Cosby hit his stride in the second season and then slowly let the air out three to four.
Yeah, that was the most controversial thing about that guy.
Thank you.
That's what a lot of people, when they bring him up, that's what they talk about.
That's the first thing they say.
Okay, I'm sorry. I meant the Huxtable show.
I'm about to say, don't discount the Huxtables now.
The Huxtable show. No, but I will actually say that in my heart, I feel like that show jumped the shark by season three. I don't know why. It's just...
You crazy. They hadn't even done Night and Day yet.
Okay. No. Well, they did. That was season two.
Golden Girls kind of fan.
What season, Stevie Wonder?
Season two.
Oh.
Damn it on the one.
Damn it on the one, man.
Season two. I'm telling you.
When white kids learn about Sam...
Ray Charles is season two. Jamming on the one, season two.
Hey, Judah Jameson ain't season two. And Blair
yes, it is. Where she came in the house and they started break that. Actually, season one.
Oh, that's right.
I like season three of Sita's World on BET.
You know what?
Sita's World. I remember Sita's World.
One time, I went to Roscoe's and this girl ran up to me. It was like me and Kamal went in there. It's like, oh my God, I love y'all. I love it. Oh, y'all don't know. And then she's like, I'm Sita. And then she went into her voice, and me and Kamal lost it. Like, that for me, I felt like I made it because.
Can you explain Sita to Mita?
Okay, Sita was like, it was like this animated chicken head that used to be on BET. It was the craziest shit.
Thank you.
She hosted a show, yo, and like it was the wildest shit. It was called Sita's World.
Yeah. That was way funnier than me Googling it. That's great. Thank you.
Fonte, I'm going to tell you right now, somewhere in the world is a $1 billion industry check with your name on it. If you can somehow figure how to give like microbyte descriptions to everything that ever existed.
No, he's taglines. He's tagline Fonte.
Oh, I will keep that in mind.
Did you say digital chicken head?
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically what it was.
One of the headlines reads, "We need an apology for Sita's World."
Yeah, it's a show. Like now, it probably wouldn't air today. Like now, it would launch a million.
Well, it would seem corny, but she was like our Max Headroom.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Like,
yep.
Gen 1, like Grand Theft Auto graphics. You know what I mean? Like when they would like pop like this.
Right.
But she would host. She hosted a show. I like Sita's World.
At least they tried it. You know, BET will try something.
They tried.
Yeah, you know.
I support Sita.
I'm not mad at them.
I support Sita.
Well, Mr. Andre, I know you've had a very long day.
Guys, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for coming on our show. And
did you say it's the perfect way to end the day? Is that what you said?
Yeah, like it was a nice wind down because I had to do all these like rapid fire interviews and only talk about the movie. It was nice to just like talk to human beings. Yeah. Like human beings.
Yeah, man. And I want to say before we go too, man, my girl Golden Shine, who's does your makeup, she did we worked together on a show for Comedy Central a couple years back, but she just always has the best things to say about you, and like she just loves working on the show, and she just, you know, so I just wanted to just, you know, say what's up, man. This is our first time meeting, but she always just speaks very highly of you and just says you're just an A1 dude, man.
Oh man, I'm flattered. She's my sister from another mister. I love her.
That she's good people.
Good people, yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, okay. On behalf of Sugar Steve and Laia and Unpaid Bill and Fonticolo, we'd like to thank our guest, Eric Andre, for coming on Questlove Supreme.
Thanks.
We will see you on the next go round. All right.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte. Make sure you keep up with us on Instagram at QLS and let us know what you think and who should be next to sit down with us. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. All right? Peace.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.